Darren Scales, creator of Dark Wave Universe. And back for ordering, director Graham Harper, would you kindly join us and select the sort of panel on this particular area? So we'll
terrific.
Move on.
Absolutely
from there.
Brilliant.
Okay, have a seat. Okay, so Darren, let's continue following through, because there was a section which ties in very much with George, where you said to me earlier, I could reveal this to George, but he might be very upset with respect to the role of the artist. Would you like to just say about the multiverse that is the Dark Wave thing?
Oh, yes. So the whole point of making this film, this one film, of the latest short, is part of a larger process, which is to try and get this Dark Wave universe turned into a franchise, ideally as a TV show. And one of the... I'll show you now. One of the avenues that we've tried with The Drip, which is the film that came out before this, is we've created what I've called a storyboard novel, which is basically... I don't know what the word is, but we've sort of comicized... a film. So they're screenshots that, using obviously, you know, an app, you can basically turn a screenshot into. And this is like a 320-page, because it's the whole movie. I mean, this is just my work. I'm not an artist by any stretch. But at Comic Cons, it's done very well. We give away bits of, you know, obviously we can't get out 320-page comic books. But one of the things about The Drift, which is in the same universe, obviously it's all low budget, is that one of the great things about comics for us is that you can't hear the crap microphone. You know, you can't see it shot on DSLR. What you see, admittedly, it's still not a comic, don't get me wrong, it's not, you know, like you guys achieve. But it does present a more completed feel, even though it's not actually, a proper comic, whatever, but, you know, lips and all the rest of it. But yeah, it's free, it's on Facebook, if you want to see it, you're more than welcome to check it out. I mean, it's just the whole movie, it is like a story. I mean, it's obviously all screenshots from the film. And there are some, what was that thing called, double page?
Spreads, yeah.
Yeah, we've got those. Although I don't know if they were called that. So on here, they're probably like half page. But they fly through The Drift. I'm trying to find one now to impress you. So here they're flying The Drift. But I even changed the colour of the background of the paper. I mean, it like space with a... when they're flying in space. That's how artistic I was getting. The software I use, if anyone cares, is called Comic Life. You've probably heard of it. Looks better when it's like printed out, as you can see. So, I just thought I'd show you that. But it's done. It's another way that I have tried over. I mean, I've been making Dark Wave now since about 2007, and we've tried everything. We continue to try everything from Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all the social media that you can think of, and we're struggling both. In terms of getting funding, which is obviously what we were looking at, is one side of it is trying to get money, because all the films so far have been self-funded by us.
Just to hold it there for a moment, yeah. Graham, obviously you've worked extensively with BBC, ITV, lots of productions, Doctor Who, Robin Hood, and so on and so forth, Inside Number 9. In terms of budget, what would you estimate that budget to have come in at? I mean, I'm fairly sure that you won't be sort of...
I'm going to be hugely surprised. I don't know, I came in halfway through probably. I don't know how many minutes have been shown beforehand.
Yeah, it's just three
maybe
times.
5 minutes or so. Yeah. I have no idea. It looked fantastic. It was Mad Max to me. Mm. Fantastic. And I love the genre. I love the way it was made. I like the effects. I like the style of it. So you won me over. I don't know. I would have thought probably, I don't know, maybe half a million. I have no idea.
Yeah, it was £4,500.
We've got a chance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but it cost £4,500. This is the whole thing about, you know, you make lots of friends, you've lots of networking, you work for free, helping people out. And I mean, I've been making films for quite a long time. So mostly the spoofs and like Star Wars and stuff, which got some sort of notoriety and people started becoming curious. So by the time I got to doing the Dark Wave universe, I had quite a large group of people who wanted to help. So, although it cost £4,500 to make, we still shot on Arri
a Miro, it's a small Alexa camera, which we got for free. We got the truck for free. We got the location for virtually for free. Top tip, by the way, if you're making films with farmers, don't offer them any money. They don't care about money. All they care about is livestock and crops and their community. So make a donation to the local church, and they gave us everything. And it cost like 200 quid for 5 days. You know, instead of movie making money. Yeah. So the top tip for farmers, you know, give money to the church and they'll give you everything. So everyone worked for nothing, but we fed the crew well. That's another way of keeping the cost down. But it's not sustainable. That's the thing. We couldn't turn that into a TV show. We go to the industry and we've pitched Dark Wave, we've shown them the comic, we've shown them a script for a feature for the Phoenix, the spaceship you see at the end. And they always come back to you and say, well, why don't you just do this first? Why don't you just make this? Just have a go and do this. Do as a comic. Do as a Comic Con. Go to San Diego. Make as a short. And after like 5 years, you're still you're still producing stuff and no one's giving you any money. And that's a real,
frustrating.
Real fight. It's difficult because the other side of it is in terms of is getting audience as well. You go to Comic Con, you give them. I mean, I bet most people here who saw that Dark Wave leaflet thought, okay, that's nice. But if it said Iron Man or Marvel or Batman or something, you'd gone, or Star Wars, you'd gone, oh, I know that. I'll have a look at that. So that's the other thing. It's not just money you're trying to get. You know, it's trying even to get the audience to look at it sometimes is also tough.
Right, well, there are two areas that I think you should look at. One is, and I'm not going to tell anybody else, but I'm going to pass you on a name that you should get in contact with, and I'll try and introduce
it's
you.
It's the importance of networking, isn't it?
But I'm not going to say anymore. Okay. Number two, the Chinese market, I think, is about to explode in this area because they are now.
Science fiction is now legal in China.
And they are now doing, for top eight, I can tell you now, they're not prepared to spend loads of money, but they're prepared to spend a long time doing it, science fiction. So you need someone who's got a connection there, and I haven't, but I have someone, I know somebody who has, cool. So I'll pass that on to you.
Success. That's a day's been worthwhile.
See you later. I'm in China.
No, I just happen to. I have just been approached about something in China. What they want to do. I'm too old to start doing things. They want to do something that's so ridiculously tight in schedule. And I know I've worked on tight schedules, really tight schedules, for very little money to create something that I hope was exciting, but I can't do it anymore. I mean, I want to enjoy my life. So you may be able to cope with that, because I don't know how long that... actually don't know how long that took you to do.
So it took...
It was seamless in terms of...
It was 4 months. 4 months in pre-production, writing and stuff with three writers. It was shot in 3 days.
You'll have a job.
Yeah, 3 days, and then post production was about 7 months. There's 185 visual effects shots, so creating just trying to. Yeah. Originally, the idea is you only saw the Phoenix, the super spaceship at the end. That's what the whole thing's all about. That's the thing that's going to change the galaxy. It's going to fix everything, like Knight Rider in space. You know, it's going to go from one planet at a time, fixing things. Meanwhile, the Ministry's chasing them as well. The idea was you just see the Phoenix in one shot at the end, but we were so excited when we built the model in CG. We thought, nah, screw it, we're going to do something else.
You've got a 7 out of 10 for your first Starburst movie. What would you give Robin in terms of... no pressure here, but an on-the-spot review.
What, you mean like a review?
Yes.
I can't believe how little that costs. I just can't. The special effects. I mean, you're talking Industrial Light and Magic / Waiter. Effects there.
Yeah, the guys did.
I would happily give that an 8.5 without even seeing it again. But I want to see it again.
Right. Okay.
Take
that and that. Put it all together. Take the package.
Can I ask you a question, Dan? Is the three dishes that have fallen down? Is that like CGI?
No, they're real. They're real.
Oh, that is actually.
Yeah, so we mixed. They're near Laos. They're about 45 minutes northeast of here.
Uh-huh.
And when I was in the Air Force, there's a big tower next to it. It's called Stenagot. And we used to teach the aero erectors to climb the tower. And I got there quite a lot to film stuff and what have you, because I wasn't scared of heights.
Those three collapsed dishes are actually.
Yeah, they're really there. They used to be on towers themselves. They put them on the deck. But obviously, all the mountains and everything else we had to put in, because there aren't many mountains in Lincolnshire.
There's one hill.
So it's just one. Yeah, just we couldn't move that. So. But yeah, they're real, yeah.
Wow.
How did you do the shot when the whatever it is,
Phoenix.
And they're coming up. The camera comes up from behind the truck as it's moving.
You mean when it reveals the dishes?
Yeah, yes.
That's a drone. So yeah, so basically, it was a drone. Took quite a while because drones are not easy to fly. You have a pilot and you have a camera operator to make it work. And we also shot, the film is 2K, but we shot it at 4K. So basically, we reached super high resolution like these TVs are going to be. But by doing that, we could then crop it in post. And by doing so, when it came back, even though there was a bit of wind and stuff, we were able to stabilise the shot and obviously map it. So like when Sarah's running towards the dishes to rescue David, that was a drone. It had to come right round and follow her all the way across and then follow her all the way back. And we were able to sort of crop it.
Of course, in Hollywood terms, the entire budget of what you spent on that film in a major Hollywood production that's what one shot would cost, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Well, I don't think it would cover the coffee budget.
In fact, I think catering was one of our most expensive areas of the budget, but it was cheaper to feed the crew like kings rather than pay them minimum wage or whatever. we had chili, we had shepherd's pie, we had fresh fruit, we had organic, we had gluten free. One thing I really learned from the military was, you know, an army, even though I was in the Air Force, really does march on its stomach, and people really look forward to those breaks. And we always stuck to our breaks. You know, when we stop at 12, we stop at 12, unless we're literally on a shot. Other than that, we stop. And
I've been speaking to Daz over the years.
This is your mic. That's fantastic.
It reminds me of a young Graham Harper when you were doing Case of Androzani and all that sort of excitement there. So, does this resonate with yourself in terms of the way you're forward?
I worked when I first started directing, I was working at the BBC and I worked on some Doctor Who, one particular Doctor Who story, which they were killing it. They were killing the series off and nobody wanted it. Yeah, it was a great script with a really good story, etc. And for Tuppence Halfpenny, we made it work. We had to lose lots and lots of effects, lots of things, make it more earthbound, as it were, even though it was another planet, etc. But those decisions were good because it meant that the truth of the story could be told.
And of course, you could revisit it and digitally enhance it
later
on. Which was okay, I'll open it up to.
But it was cheap. That really is cheap, and it doesn't look it. That looks 300 or 400 times better than anything I've made. That was absolutely.
Oh, brilliant. You can stay. You're so kind.
No, but it was compared to what you blah blah blah. It was brilliant.
Thank you.
Well, as you know, I've been singing the praise for 2 years now. We'll continue to do so. We'll get there, exactly. Any general questions people would like to sort of put to either Darren or Graham at this stage?
Have you approached anyone in the United... I'm sorry, I'm so rude. I'm an American. So have you approached anyone in the United States?
There's a chap called Sean Daniel, who was one of the producers on The Expanse. Is someone we've just managed to get in contact with. I've got kind of like a... I call him my Hollywood uncle, although he's not my uncle and he doesn't live in Hollywood. But he's an executive producer on Fantastic Beasts, and he's affiliated with the university, and he comes up and does lectures and stuff. And although he can't do anything necessarily himself, he has quite a large address book.
Could he call somebody at BBC America?
Well, we haven't done that yet. We're looking at Netflix as an option.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
and that's totally exploded. Right?
Yeah.
All of those people.
But it's all about timing, is that the thing? Everything's about timing. We also work with a guy whose name completely escapes me, but he worked on Dark Matter, and he was a producer on that. And again, it's always about, sometimes we get quite close to a good meeting where there's a checkbook coming, and then something else gets in the way, normally Kim Kardashian or something that is easier to make money from or something else. And it's just all about risk, because no one's heard of Dark Wave. And that's why I think they keep asking me to make these movies, these shorts, to try and market it and show it. Because distribution is easy. We had a deal for The Drift, which we turned down. I'm glad we did, because we had, they wanted sequel rights for distribution,
oh,
and no one would have touched us if we'd have signed that off. Yeah. So we didn't do that. We went to YouTube. It's had over, collectively now, that film and The Drift has had over 1 million views on YouTube. But as awesome as that sounds, and I'm really pleased, it's still a tiny, tiny drop, you know, in the ocean. It's tough.
And it doesn't bring you any fans to do anything more?
Not really. I mean, we do make a little bit of money from The Drift now, just from like the little advert that comes on at the beginning, you know, pays for our website, keeps that going. But
so
you've
got
like
a Patreon sort of thing or a fundraiser thing?
Well, we do, but we found we tried to push that and people weren't interested. People just want everything for free, want their content, which is why we give away the comic, for example.
Yeah.
And people like it, and we've done like little videos that people share, and we have a Twitter campaign.
But it doesn't help you, and that's
yeah.
the thing.
So the aim, we did a marketing report. We tried to show, this is all about the funding side of it, we're trying to show investors that the response from the film, and we're not unique, many people, just like filmmakers getting similar things, but the response has been massively popular with the Dark Wave universe, with what you could do with it. You've got the Phoenix, you've got the crystal, you've got the organics, that's what Ben is, the child. He's an organic, he can hold a crystal, they can do stuff with a crystal, it's why they're being hunted. There's so much you can do, and the response has been so wonderfully positive, but it's still not out there, and that's you've got to jump that, you need some sort of endorsement. I always talk about Martian, fabulous movie, fabulous book. I never read the book, I don't read many books, but because I'm too busy making films.
Yeah.
I never heard of The Martian until it came on, but as soon as you heard Matt Damon was in it and Ridley Scott was going to direct it or whatever, you go and see it. Yeah, that's what we need. And that's one of the things I do at Comic Cons. We go to the celebs and say, look, can you endorse this? What do you think? Do you want to be in it?
I'm sure we had Shane Rimmer, obviously.
Shane was exactly
possibly
the same.
Possibly Daphne Ashbrook
in
the next one.
Yeah,
you know?
Shane. We got Shane here. It was the last symposium, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I knew Shane from what you'd done. But I had no. I think you suggested. I think you said. That's why don't you just put him in your next
exactly.
movie? And Shane said, "Sure. What do you got?" And I had to make up his character on the spot. I did his whole thing in there. Originally, he was never in the story at all. And I just went, "Well, you look a bit granddaddy, don't you?" So tell you what, you could be. You could be Sarah's father. And I made the whole thing up.
Brilliant.
Within like 90 seconds.
Oh,
and he was like,
well.
And Sheila loved it. His wife
yes.
loved it. Sheila. She said, "Oh, that's he'll be in it." And I thought, awesome. Of course, Natalie Cox, she was Juno Eclipse in Star Wars Force Unleashed, so she's got a little bit of following as well, which has really helped us.
So, Graham, how does this... I mean, because obviously we've talked long and hard over the years about you've done some fantastic TV work, but the motion picture, is it still there? Does some of the challenges that Darren's been faced with in terms of raising that capital for the long-awaited Western, for instance...
It's never good. No, it's not going to happen with me.
Okay.
Western, no.
Never say never.
I do. Because I'm going to lose interest soon. So there's only so much you can take. I'm involved with somebody who is quite big in the business, and he's finding it hard to raise money. He's made some great movies and is very well known. So if he's having a hard time, I'm not surprised you are. And I don't mean that rudely. I mean, he's got the foot in the door already. So. But I could still pass you into hopefully a nice area and see whether they'd be interested. I'm sure they would be.
Inside Number 9 is currently what you're working on. Just talk us through a little bit about the sort of processes for that in terms of...
Say again, sorry.
Inside Number 9, the sort of line from that perspective, because you did the classic Christmas episode. We've got a couple more coming up. Share with us sort of how you sort of... How did you get involved with that particular...
I have no idea. Well, I have. The reason I got involved with the one that went out at Christmas was because it was meant to be a... Well, they didn't call it a send-up, but it was meant to be a send-up of a 70s-style version
of... Tales of the Unexpected.
Tales of the Unexpected, that kind of thing, which were pretty grim, not very well acted, made probably in two or three days, and very, very cheaply. And so it was warts and all. And it was multi-camera studio. Well, I have that experience, so I had to obviously use that. And that's why I was approached, because I'm an old git that knows how to do multi-camera. I hate multi-camera. I like single-camera shoots because they're more exciting. But that's why I was there. Now I've just made two more for them, which are single-camera shoots. Completely different, delightful stories with an edge. The two I've just done are not dark, whereas most of the episodes they make, Reese and, I keep calling him Reese Witherspoon, Reese Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton. They write really dark stories or light stories with a strange twist. But the two I've just done were absolutely, one is a delightfully sad, a beautiful story, and the other one is quite, it's all about a jury choosing a best actor is kind of thing. And the back, what goes on back in the back, I can't say it. What goes on behind the scenes, as it were, and how awful it is, the choosing of people who are going to win an award.
Not representative of real life at all, though, obviously.
I'm afraid it is, from what I know.
And, Derek, returning to the sort of multiverse structure, because clearly we're looking at that. I mean, I'm already thinking maybe George could write some material for you from that point and feed into to the system. How broad do you see that? I mean, do you have a kind of general vision in terms of how it sort of goes?
Yeah, I mean, we've actually encouraged something that actually scares some of the investors in London when I mentioned it, I think called Project 50-50, which basically is, and it's working at the minute. I've actually got someone who's novelising the Phoenix Rising, which is the feature we're hoping to make. Mm-hmm. And basically the idea is that I wanted to not so much give away, having made fan films, that's my background, originally it was fan films, jumping into someone else's franchise and then not only creating some really cool spin-offs and alternative stories, but also monetizing it. Why shouldn't they monetize as much as we should? Rather like Paramount shutting Star Trek movies down and all the rest of it that haven't been made by them, etc., that actually everybody could win. But there are rules, for example, they can't fix the universe, that's going to be my job. They can't kill the Phoenix. But, for example, these starlight crystals that have all been broken, there are still active ones out there. There's a whole story. There's a book I read when I was a child, so I did read one book called The Pearl, which I did at GCSE. And basically it's about a fisherman who finds a pearl and how he thinks it's going to solve all his problems. Like winning the lottery, he thinks it's going to save his life, but actually it's not. So inspired from that, what if there were drift hunters who are out there looking for starlight crystals and one of them finds a crystal but won't tell the crew and how that's a whole separate story in the same universe that, nothing's working. There's so much. The idea is that if oil stopped working right now, this second, it won't ignite, it doesn't work, how are we all going to get home? How far would it take? How long would it take you to walk home right now? What if you lived in America? You're going
to
swim.
I have to swim.
Yeah. That's now look at that on a galactic scale. That's the thing. And that's how. That's why Anderson, is stuck in on a convoy. He hasn't seen his daughter for nearly 20 years, and that type of thing. So if you think of a universe like that, there must be hundreds of stories that you could. Just anyone just trying to survive, castaways to the ministry, to someone finding out what the ministry is up to, etc. And this Project 50-50 is to sort of open it up to radio dramas, comics, games.
So Magic Bullet Productions, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things
so
we've got...
Investors meet
yeah. Yeah. And the idea is that if it was great, if someone didn't break the rules in terms of solving the universe, then I'd just say... fill your boots, make it, and then when you get a deal, I get 50%, or Dark Red Pictures get 50%, and you get 50%. But yeah, London was very scared when I suggested that. They said, we've never done that before. I said, perhaps it should be. Perhaps it should be.
What we need is some multi-million pound investors, really. Are there any in the room?
Any? No?
Yeah. Any other sort of general questions that people ask? Yes.
You said earlier that you would sort of hoping to get it as a TV show, but also considering it as a film. Have you found it difficult to sort of decide what would go in to the TV and what you sort of have to cut out if it was a film?
Yeah, so the reason why we're looking at both is because, frankly, if it turns with technology changing and having made films for quite a while myself already, technically I could make the feature myself, but I want it to be at a level that is commercially viable that could actually get a decent return and do the story justice. As a TV show, a 10-parter, I don't have that. It's just too much work because obviously it takes a lot longer to make 10, 45-minute episodes or whatever. It's far too much work. I can't even start that, really. I couldn't have the time or the finances to do that. In terms of story crossover and stuff, the feature could be done as a mini-series, a bit like Battlestar was, the first series, as it were, the three episodes or four episodes, whatever it was. Is it three or four? Three episodes. It does actually fit that structure quite nicely. One idea was it would start off as a feature or a major pilot mini-series, then go into TV show, and then after that, start to get tired, we would serenity it at the end and turn it into a movie and then finish it off. Although I've got a story arc that goes way beyond Phoenix Rising. There's going to be Bad Phoenix.
No.
Then you've got
Bad Phoenix.
You've got Bad Phoenix, Kit and Carl. You've got the organics, and then the Ministry are chasing organics, but they cheat and they try creating the synthetics, not like from aliens, but they create the synthetics, people who are trying to find these crystals and can do that. So they have the organic synthetic war. There's all sorts of things that you can do, you know, within a TV show, which is why I'm pushing that. The great thing about like Netflix, especially, is that now you're not even limited to 45 minutes.
That's right.
You can do 55 minutes. You can do 35 minutes. You can make it how you want it. And that's fabulous. You know,
well, that's where it's all at right yeah. now. It is not the same anymore. It's yeah. not network television anymore
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
It's really exciting.
Yeah.
Great stuff's coming out of
yeah,
that series.
Definitely. So, yeah, that's, you know, in terms of, I mean, Jason Starr, the people that fly the Phoenix, you've got three characters. You've got the Phoenix, which is alive. It doesn't talk like Kit. It's a bit more like R2-D2, I suppose, but it's alive. It has its own conflict. It was designed to kill organics. Another spoiler that comes in the movie. How does it deal with that? You've got Jason, who's the only one who can fly it, and you find out why he's the only person in the galaxy who can fly the ship. No one else can. And you've got Star, who's a star-like child. She has the power of an organic, but she doesn't need to hold a crystal, and you find out why that is as well.
Can I ask a question? Have you packaged all of that information? I'm sorry, I came in a little bit late.
Yes. So
is that all part
yeah,
of
the package? Yes, yeah, so we have a website.
Because that's like the first season.
There's a yeah. Oh, yeah, we've got the whole proposal, story arc, treatments.
That's great.
You know, things to go, which we keep pushing when we go to London and give to people, and they go, thanks. And
thanks, then, it's great.
It's great,
oh,
bye.
I like the cartoon.
Yeah, I love the binding. It's awesome.
I can't really yeah. believe why anyone who saw that would be biting your hand off to
absolutely.
Come and direct for you. It just doesn't make sense to me.
It's a timing thing, though.
Yeah, it's timing sometimes.
You're
just
supposed to find its right
yeah.
moment.
It's like making a symposium free to students, and you think, well, no, I don't know.
Yes.
Where's the dream back there?
Go on, Alan. Go for it.
I watched it. It flew by. I thought it was, you know, amazing piece of work. Same. I came up here to hear the same because it was so much.
Yeah, it's proper 5.1 mix. That's
yeah.
why I won't use that version, not the YouTube one.
Yeah,
I went proper 5.1.
You know.
Yeah.
But the question is, and it's probably an odd question, but how long was it?
24 minutes.
24 minutes. And that cost
$4,500. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a damn question. So if it was, let's say, 10 minutes, would it cost $2,000?
No, because the costs were all the setup costs. So it might cost a little bit less, but
not significantly.
Right. Because it's what you're paying for. So generators, rental of the land, you know, the dishes, we had to pay for that, you know, for the local donation, hotel accommodation, stuff like that for the actors. Because it's not about, you want everyone so close to the location. One idea was to have one going home at the end, but that meant we lost time, so we had to pay for that. And it was only a 3.5-day shoot, so not 3 days.
I was going to say, though, to get 24 minutes usable footage out of 3.5 days, that's pretty good going.
It's pretty good,
yeah. We planned, we mega, I mean, that's the military background. Everything was planned to the nth degree.
So, you can't go back, but also you can't go forward. So if you did, let's say, if it was an hour long, that would make 6 days, wouldn't it?
We shot it for as cheap as we could, and that was to keep it filming as short as possible. So, yeah, the catering, obviously, crew support would start going up. But also, it's about what people can give for free. You see, this is why I say the TV show, you see, thing. I made The Drift, which is a 100-minute long feature, and that was shot over 12 days, and that was shot over 12 long days. And that was over 4 weekends, and that's where the longer you extend that, that's when people start not being able to help, because obviously they're given their time for free, and that's when you have to start paying. We actually worked out the capitation, the actual cost. If we paid everybody for Edge of the Storm, the film would have cost around about £150,000, which is still good.
Yeah. You know. That's a lot of favors.
Yeah.
That's
nice. Yeah. Yeah. They're not going to do it again, probably.
No, that's it.
That's it
bridges,
that's
maybe,
it now, yeah.
It?
Yeah.
So how much did The Drift cost you then, if that was
£5,000.
That still cost you.
Yeah.
100 minutes for £5,000 over 12 days.
Yeah.
So,
that's technically made a profit, but we gave all the money to charity. And that was one of the reasons how we were able to make it for so little money. So one of the ways of raising money for your film is if you give your money that you make away at the end of it. And that worked.
Here's another really... As far as unions go, I don't know what the situation here is.
It was non-union, obviously.
So non-union.
Yeah.
So everybody's non-union.
Or they're not telling their unions that they're doing it. So some people on those credits, for example, aren't their real names. to say that because they just wanted to get
involved. Okay.
So we had, for example, there was a couple of...
Mr. Spielberg didn't want to credit, did he?
No, no, no. We just called him Dave. he was on there. But we had one close issue. There's a guy on there called Richard Pryke, who you may have heard of. He won an Oscar for sound mixing Slumdog Millionaire, and he mixed it for us.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just chance. I mean, timing sometimes works for you.
See, so you've got the chance. Yeah.
Well, that's where you do the networking thing. They all found like Star Wars fan films and the networking you do, working for free and all that kind of thing. And eventually they say, oh, that guy's making that movie. And it just happened to be right place, right time. He gave it to his one of his interns to do, and he saw it on the mix that I produced, which is obviously not as good as that. And he said, "I'm going to do this one." He said, "I'll do it." So he spent. We were supposed to have it for a day, and he spent 3.5 days mixing it for us.
And that would have cost if you got
it's,
that.
It's 4,000 a day.
4,000.
It would have cost
Jeez.
Us. Yeah.
So 12 grand, so
yeah.
Turned around.
Yeah.
I assume that's like a call, you couldn't call in that favour again. Then.
No, that was all by chance. It was just being the right place, right time, smiling nicely, giving a cup of tea and a biscuit, and suddenly we had an Oscar-winning sound designer on our books.
And you're really aware of the sound in this?
Yeah.
In a good way.
Well, I love sound. It's one of the really big things that's important to me. It's one reason why I love Jurassic Park. Everyone talks about the visuals, which are fabulous, but the sound of the dinosaurs and that sound mix, it's just fabulous. And the Phoenix... I mean, some of it's a little bit deliberately cheesy, but the engine noise, the rumble, I want that power of the Phoenix to be felt. I don't want it just to be seen on the screen. It's got to get you there because the Phoenix is alive, and that's where you feel that you're alive, and that has to connect. You know.
Interesting. Yeah. Graham, I know you're going to be staying with us for the next panel that we actually have because we'll be joined by Daphne Ashbrook and talking about a variety of things, including the connection in a directorial sense between Daphne's Doctor Who and your Doctor Who, which is going to be a little bit, I think we'll open up. Ooh. Plus, of course, we can also say we're connecting with franchises from Star Trek, from JAG, from Don Belisarius, to, of course, The Drift, etc. But for the moment, can I ask you to thank me, to thank you, to join me.
Alex, everybody.
Graham and Darren, please. Thank you. So, short 10-minute break. I know. I think you guys want to have a quick chat with Graham and have a look at that. So, thanks.
Yeah.